Welcome to Conversations in Equine Science. My name is Kate Acton and I'm joined by Nancy McLean, and this is the podcast where we take equine research and try and make it accessible to horse owners and enthusiasts alike. Remember that with each topic we discuss, it's important to get professional advice before implementing any of the strategies.
All too often, pain in ridden horses is labeled as bad behavior. The apparently sound horse is naughty, lazy, difficult, explosive, spooky, nappy, and more. These labels are wrong. Pain impacts all aspects of a horse's performance, including its partnership with the rider and its potential to progress. It does not always create lameness. Relieving pain can lead to greater potential, a deeper partnership, and improved performance. In the recently published book, Harmonious Horsemanship, Use of the Ridden Horse Ethogram to Optimize Potential, Partnership, and Performance, Sue Dyson and Sue Palmer share their professional knowledge and experience. Check it out. It can be bought from Troubadour Book Publishing or Amazon. This week, Kate and I are discussing a paper that was actually a suggestion from one of our listeners. She suggested if we could find research on the wind and how it affects horses. Now, Kate and I both did a search and we had a little bit of, we didn't get a lot of results from those searches, but my supervisor from the University of Edinburgh, and he's also a professor at Michigan State. He had written a research paper back in, I think they began the research in 2019, and it was actually available in June of 2022. The name of that paper is Tracking the Impact of Weather on Equine Activity While Pastured. Now, Greta A. Keller is the first author, and then Brian D. Nielsen, Fernando B. Vergara Hernandez, and Kara I. Robison. So this article, I'm just going to read the quick abstract. It's about keeping horses outdoors on pasture full time with free access to shelter holds numerous advantages over housing in stalls, prompting both better mental and physical health. One reason for these benefits is the potential for increased physical activity in horses outdoors on pasture versus those confined to stalls. However, it is not guaranteed the horse will take advantage of this opportunity for greater movement. For this reason, it is important to understand the various reasons why horse activity patterns change. The objective of this study was to investigate how various weather factors, including temperature, humidity, precipitation, and wind speed, directly affect equine movement. So to achieve this, they picked horses on two farms that were managed similarly. The horses were fitted with triaxial accelerometers, and during five independent time periods from January to August. So these devices attached around the pastern by the fetlock, and they tracked the number of steps, standing time, time lying down, and number of lying sessions or lying bouts. So then they compared the movement data with the weather patterns. So Kate, do you want me to read Susan's email?
Yeah, I think that'd be nice to add in.
This paper doesn't approach all her questions, but I think it can give her an overall view of how wind affects horses according to this study. So the email says, "Hi, Kate and Nancy. Congratulations on your fifth year. I was wondering about the effect that weather changes have on horses. We all know they can get crazy when it is windy and the wind can interfere with their senses, but are there other scientific reasons? Since they are prey animals, does it have something to do with the habits of the predators? Also, my horse is the sentry of the herd and she takes her job very seriously. Based on science, is there any effective way to approach training with her? Asking her to neglect her sentry duties is going against her instincts. Thank you, Susan from Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania." So there you go, guys. And this is the paper we will address that email with. So Kate, what were your thoughts on this paper?
I thought this paper was really interesting and for a couple of reasons, but there are a couple of areas actually in the paper also where I was left with a few more questions. So I suppose we can come through that as we go. But what they found basically was there was no strong correlation between the movement of the horses and any of the environmental conditions. There were differences in the average number of steps and average time lying down between farms and across the testing periods, so winter versus summer and spring. And that might suggest that ground conditions or the use of blankets had an influence as well. So this study sheds more light on the impact of weather, but there were some, I suppose, like not quite hindrances, but there were some things that maybe held it back. So on one of the farms, the horses were blanketed. That's obviously going to reduce their reaction to weather. We can hypothesize. But I would agree with Susan that, well, what I, from my anecdotal observations, have tended to notice more is where we've got wind and rain combined in Ireland, then we get, like, our horses just turn their rears, they stop grazing, they're really not impressed, and they seek shelter more so than when it's just windy. So when this paper is talking about movement and saying that with the winds, they, you know, it didn't seem to stop the movement as much or impact the movement, I think I would agree from the experience I would have. But in the States, you guys have crazy fast wind compared to what we would have over here. So I think your wind speeds will be higher, certainly some states that are more hurricane prone. So yeah, there are a lot of differences, I guess, but I thought it was really interesting. And actually, now that you've read Susan's letter out again, she mentioned, is it the behavior of the predator? And I wonder if that does have an influence, which would be an entirely different study. But in this, these accelerometers that Nancy said that are on the pastern, these are amazing. Like, now we can put these on horses and monitor long-term, collect long-term data while they're out in the field, which would be near to impossible to collect manually. So it gives us a really great image without a human impacting the behavior. But it would also be really nice to see how the human impacts the behavior. So is it that the horse's senses are a bit thrown with the weather, and that then maybe becomes a cyclical effect where we feel like they're getting a bit more nervous, we're maybe getting a bit more nervous and we don't realize it, they're picking up negative feedback from us, and maybe we're winding each other up? I don't know. That was just one of the things that I thought of when it comes to riding horses in inclement weather. But I suppose, Nancy, you've had some experience firsthand of this.
Yeah, I was on a blind horse one time, and when I turned him into the wind, and that particular day it was a north wind going about 40 to 50 miles per hour, you know what, he bolted. And I just always thought the fact that he could not see, it probably was not a good idea for me to be riding him when the winds were so strong, because I later kind of concluded that hearing was his major sense when he was being ridden, and all of a sudden we turned into the wind and he couldn't hear anything. And so his response was to panic and to bolt. Now, once he got through that initial bolt, we did crash through a fence and I kind of circled him. He was not injured, and we went where his rear end was into the wind. He could completely be controlled again. So I do think there's something to horses reacting to the wind, but in his instance, it was because he had lost his eyesight. So sometimes I think younger horses, this paper even reports that younger horses tend to respond to the wind, or I think the way they worded it was they were more sensitive to the changes in the wind. And I think that may be because they're younger. And I always used to think my young thoroughbreds were seeing things going by them and they were trying to race the wind in a way. It was a combination of visual and hearing and feeling, their sense of touch, that it was, you know, they just didn't know quite how to handle that. And then as they age, they handle the wind and the changes so much better. Now, I will say my older horses, when there's a weather front coming through and the temperature here in the Midwest USA, it can change by 50 degrees in one day when these fronts come out of the north. And, you know, I see my horses react to that. The temperature drops, the wind comes through, they start running. So I don't know if that's so much the barometric pressure changes or what it is. It might not even be the wind, but I do notice that's when I see a big change in their behavior.
And with just with the track pony, Nancy, that was when you were riding him, that was on the same track that he did every single day, and it was enclosed. He was so habituated to it, so it really, like, that's how you can almost rule out that there wasn't something else in the environment. Yeah. It was the fact the wind has now lessened a sense that he relies even more so on than the other ponies.
And you know, the there's like at this time there were like 9 to 11 races on a race card, and by the end of the afternoon the wind had died down immensely and absolutely no problem with him. I mean, it was, I think it was sensory overload almost. And, you know, Susan asked, you know, do we have any training ideas? And I tell you what, the whole thing with that particular horse is I would not ride him in the wind. If it was a big wind gust, on a particular day and his loss of vision, I would opt, you know, to only ride him when I think his senses could handle it. But how can you override her sentry behavior? And, you know, it just, I know mares especially take their job so serious when they're the sentry of the herd and they're vigilant. And I think Kate Finner always says it's about establishing patterns. And a lot of times doing the same routine over and over and over in your training on those windy days, maybe go back to your basics and reinitiate those early patterns. And, you know, you should find you're able to get into her head a little bit and get control.
And I think if you keep a diary, I mean, this is where we get very research oriented, but if you do keep a diary of the wind speeds and how she reacts, you might just find her sweet spot where, look, up to this level, she's fine. She'll plod along and get on with it. But above this, that's just outside of her comfort or her threshold. And if she's an older mayor, then obviously, like in this paper, they mention as well that younger horses might just be a bit more reactive. And with time, as they age, they learn, you know, it's nothing to panic about. But if she's older and she's still not a fan of it, it might just be that it's not for her. And I guess it's kind of a hard one to weigh up because we talk about finding their niche or finding the work they enjoy and trying to really support them from that aspect. But when I try and compare it and think of, for example, my dog will not go outside when it rains, but she has to go to the bathroom. So there's some things they just have to do that they're not going to be a fan of. But if you can get around it and if you don't have to train when it's windier, it obviously depends on how windy it is in Pennsylvania. I won't venture to guess that I know the exact climate, but if you can get around it, then maybe track that, see where her happy space is, and then you'll know yourself if you look at the weather, okay, tomorrow we're going to push training to the next day.
Yeah, that's a great point, Kate, because some of these wind speeds in this study were insignificant, like I think 0.44 miles per hour. That's not even a wind where I live,
That's
but
a breath.
that's a breath. Yeah, the highest wind was 24 miles per hour. Now, that's a little bit significant, but for my horses, it's got to be that like 50 mile per hour wind gust, 30 mile per hour wind gust, those types of things. And then it all always there's a plastic bag that's blowing out in a field a mile away that they see. So, you just have to consider, is it going to be a big deal and turn into a big argument where it's not worth it? You might just want to do groundwork that day, or you might just want to say, we'll put it off until these wind speeds are going to die down a little bit. And a lot of times where I live, the wind speeds are, it's like the late afternoon, they're kind of done with. So you could kind of watch your weather patterns and kind of establish good training times according to that. But I will say that they did five time periods, and they started out with like January 5th and January 18th, February 18th, but then they waited until April 27th and July 26th. They had to space them out because that accelerometer was rubbing and irritating the horse's legs. So they even did put it on each horse's left hind limb and wrapped vet wrap, and then put the accelerometer on, and then more vet wrap. But that still, with the horses that did the higher number of movement tracking, it still rubbed into their legs. So they found that as warm weather came in and they had lost their winter hair coats, this accelerometer was designed for cattle. And so, anyway,
They're much thicker skinned.
much,
Using it
yeah.
on cows, yeah. I thought that was interesting. They said that that was kind of an update that could be useful for the technology, for them to know that with horses, they are thinner skinned and that irritation can occur. I did wonder too, would a padding layer have been better than vet wrap underneath the accelerometer?
It was.
And then vet wrap on top, because vet wrap can get quite sweaty as well. So on its own, I think it probably, with the movement of that and the accelerometer, would have caused a bit of irritation.
Yeah, and I thought the laying down or the lying down periods that they were tracking, they thought that had a lot more to do with ground conditions. And I will say, when we've had a lot of rain and a lot of wet weather, I don't catch my horses lying down in the pasture other than to roll in the mud and get back up again.
Yeah.
So, I agree with that. The humidity, I've always kind of found that the high humidity slows them down a little more, but maybe the humidity that they were tracking in January through April is a little bit different humidity than you get in July. So, you know, Michigan's north of us. So, you know, maybe that was, an influence on it. I mean, I always like riding my thoroughbreds in the warmer temps because they are a little bit, I don't know, they're less reactive. They love a cold, crisp morning. And I do think temperature may affect them, especially when it's one of the first cooler mornings of the autumn season. So I think to really get an overall picture, I would like this to be done on a daily basis, because just picking out, what was it, 4 days?
Yes.
7 days for four periods and then only 4 days on that fifth period. I think for further studies, I think you might get a different picture as storm fronts are coming through and the winds change direction. I mean, there's so many variables in this that...
Yeah, because I thought that too, when you've got the wind and precipitation. So when it's raining as well, like that's far more agitating to them than wind alone.
Yeah, and sometimes when the wind direction changes and the rain's coming in, it's horizontal, you know, and it's hitting them. So I think this was a great start on this type of research, but I think finding an accelerometer that, you know, they could have on for a while. And I know other studies have done GPS tracking where the horses just had a GPS monitor on them. But this actually tracking up and down, forward motion, and all that, I think it's a pretty good start on this type of research, but there needs to be more done.
And I think a couple of nice little things came out of this paper as well. Like, they talked about, I think we mentioned in the abstract, there was a difference between the farms that was seen. So farm A had a greater number of steps overall, yet it housed the oldest horse in the study. So they're saying it's possible that the younger horses within the herd encouraged greater movement in this 33-year-old horse, and therefore young horses may have a positive influence on geriatric horses on pasture. So I thought that was kind of a nice outcome. Obviously would need to be investigated a little bit further to prove that they do have a fully positive effect. And, you know, we can have some annoying... young colts that I don't think older mares would be a fan of.
No, but that was a good point that I enjoyed, because Angel always has kept Greta moving, and sometimes I get so aggravated with him. I'm just like, leave her be, because I don't want her to get hurt. And but you know what? He probably in the long run does her a lot of good.
Yeah. And they said as well, for example, farm B fed grain twice a day and farm A didn't. And they were mentioning how, you know, some believe grain causes hyperactivity. And I think it does under the right settings, absolutely. If you've a stalled horse on a lot of grain, you're going to have a jack in the box. But they said food could be a good motivator for movement, as previously discussed. So farm B actually had lower overall steps than farm A, even though they were feeding grain and farm A wasn't. So they were saying that was quite interesting. The grain wasn't instigating more burning of energy, though it's hard to really know, because farm B was, I think, show jumpers and farm A was racehorses.
Yeah.
So maybe farm A's steps and movement and energy was higher because racehorses have a propensity to be more active compared to, I suppose, show jumpers potentially. And we know thoroughbreds they're a lot more flighty. We always use that expression. So there's a bit of anecdotal evidence that comes into it as well.
Yeah, the one study where I think it was Lewis et al., they used the GPS monitors, And they did say during the winter months that placing hay around the paddock area close to the gate, it would be discourage movement. The horses went out and they would tend to hang around that area, not really venture out into the pasture because the grass is not as tasty. They would stay and eat the hay that's in that paddock area. You know what? I find that here because I will put hay out. Our pasture's pretty much dead pasture this time of year. And I do find mine don't venture out near how they move during spring and summer when the grass is very tasty. But the downside of it is the pony gets fat when that grass comes in, you know? So, I mean, turnout is good physical activity, but you also have to watch your metabolic horses because they tend to eat, you know, twice as much as the horses that don't have that metabolic propensity. So, but
absolutely. I think that would have been just my other point on this paper, because they mentioned basically placing the food. The food is the motivator for movement. So placing the food further into the pasture or placing the water trough further into the pasture can try and encourage more movement in the winter. But I would say, again, look at the management for that. If you have ponies that have a propensity to being overweight, then yeah, we want to keep that movement up. But if you have thoroughbreds out, you know, with blankets on, it's okay. I think anyway, maybe it's a naivety, but I think it would be okay that they're conserving energy in those colder months. Like, they're burning that energy and keeping themselves warm. So as long as they're getting adequate movement in the spring and summer, that seems to me to follow natural behaviors for horse herds. So I would kind of be more inclined to not make it more difficult for them, except for the fact of if they're stuck to the fence, you know, like you mentioned, Nancy, if they're literally going out to pasture but not traveling into the pasture at all, then that's, we need proper management for that behavior. But the other thing I thought, during the winter, having the water supply really far into the pasture is a management nightmare for people, you know. So going to make sure it's not frozen over a couple of times a day and checking on that water supply, it makes it more labor intensive. And we do have to factor that in as well when it comes to ensuring those things are carried out and that job is done, because that's going to impact welfare.
And you know, this is just my own pet peeve. I never mess around with where the water is because it's so important for them to drink. So my water trough is in the same general area and has been since we moved on this farm. And always want them to know that, you know, clean water is always there. And I have to say they do drink very well. I did have something happen this winter during the freezing temperatures we had, and it was below zero. I had a water trough heater that actually shocked me. Thank God it shocked me and not one of the horses. I was putting it into the water and I had a hold of the cord dropping it in. And when it hit the water, I felt a little shock through my glove. Now that is awful to have that happen to a horse, because then they won't drink. They'll think the water off is taboo and they'll stay away from it. So that's one thing that's not in this paper and shouldn't have been, because this is off topic. But if you do during the winter use those water trough heaters, kind of test them yourself and really watch your horses for reactions when they go in for that water, because that can really be a bad thing. Even automatic waterers that tend to have an electrical component, you have to make sure that's not going to give them a shock, because then they won't drink.
Yeah, and get them serviced or keep up on the maintenance of them as well.
I went and bought a new one to pitch that one because there had to have been a short in it or something.
Oh, it's not worth the risk.
it's not worth it. And thank God that it shocked me before shocking one of them, because it can take a long time to override that behavior of them wanting to stay away from the water. I try to only fill my trough the amount of water that they'll drink. And then each night I can dump it, and that eliminates me even using a water trough heater unless we get those below zero temperatures. And there's no way. You've got to use them to keep that water from freezing.
Yeah, you'd be out every 3 minutes trying to break it.
I'm not that what would you call OCD-ish. Yeah. but anyway, well, Kate, I think that's all I had. Did you have anything else?
No, that was all. That was a really interesting paper. Thank you so much, Susan, for writing in with your request. And we have a couple more coming up over the next few weeks, some interesting topics. So keep an ear out.
Okay. Thanks so much, Kate. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Nancy. Take care.
Bye-bye.